Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Public schools across the country are facing a funding crisis, and classrooms are going without the essentials like pencils and books. But with the help of Donors Choose, people like you connect directly with teachers so students get what they need to succeed. Learn more at DonorsChoose.org today.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Mr. Lion Tamer. You are one of two in a strange part of a strange city. A part of that city where bodies tend to gravitate toward the river. And the river takes them not suited and escorts them out to the ocean like a gentle dormer. I have many friends in here, including Treacle and Sugar, and many men like them. Yes.
You have many friends.
That's 1,000 Blows. You can stream all of season one now on Disney Plus. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
So this is like Peaky Blinders goes boxing.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. Peaky Blinders meets Pickpockets go boxing, right?
Yeah.
So Stephen Knight obviously is a very, very successful creator in his own right for making Peaky Blinders and single-handedly rejuvenating the flat cap revolution amongst men of a certain age. But I also didn't know that he invented Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Oh,
one of his
must be worth a fortune.
Exactly what I thought. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? He did, right? And he has basically came up with this idea, I think, when he was reading about various different gangs, because that's kind of the Peaky Blinders mindset. And he was reading about the 40 Elephants, which was a female-led pickpocket mercenary, well, whatever, gang in Victorian Britain, which was noted for its longevity. So he could get a few seasons out of this yet. And he came up with an idea to make a show ostensibly about that. So it's kind of following three separate main characters, right? We heard in the clip there, Erin Doherty as Mary Carr, the leader of the 40 Elephants. She's probably best known for breaking out as Princess Anne in this kind of second run of The Crown. Mm. And this is definitely going to be a bit of a star-making turn for her. We also heard in the clip there, Malachi, not sure, Kirby as Hezekiah Mosco. Great names all around.
Yeah.
He is fresh off the boat from Jamaica in London with his friend Alec and are lost in this brand new city trying to find their way. And then perhaps the biggest name attached is Stephen Graham, who plays boxer Sugar Goodson, who's like a East End, hard-as-nails boxer type, right?
Yeah.
And essentially, it's a drama about how those three people interact with each other, how one gets in the ring with the other while the other is on the sidelines watching on. But I didn't particularly love Peaky Blinders. I mean, I tried to watch it when it first came on and I found it unbearably slow. And then when it became this kind of cultural touch point, I tried again and found it less slow because at least I could binge it. But I never took to it in the way that I know many, many other people did take to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I kind of approached this expecting to be kind of coolly appreciative of it, but not really that taken with it. And I loved it. I thought it was paced unbelievably well. The humour is really funny when it's funny. The action, oof, like the bare knuckle fights are brutal, and the Foley artistry of sound effects is fantastic because it, like, you know, you really are feeling it when they're banging fists off faces in the ring. And all in, it was an absolute treat. Now, Disney, it airs on Hulu in the US. Disney must know what they're onto because they greenlit it for season 2 the day before season 1 even debuted. So obviously all of their insight into how well it was going to be reviewed was very positive, and I could see it becoming something very, very, very interesting. But all in, it's really well-made period drama, exciting, funny, edgy, pacey, romantic, sexy, everything. It's ticking all my boxes.
And those three main characters, are they're three separate storylines, or they're kind of intersecting?
They're intersecting the whole time, right?
Yeah.
So you land bang in London, you know, in 18 whatever, yeah. Victorian London, with Hezekiah off the boat, literally just off the boat that day, walking around London trying to find a place to stay. And then he witnesses the 40 elephants in action and is sort of swept along by fate towards this boxing club where he ends up, where both he and his friend separately end up in different boxing bouts. And then this creates a rivalry and a love triangle of sorts. Not love triangle, well, anyway, all kinds of triangles.
Yeah.
Many shapes are taking place. But all in, they are the thrust of it. Now, there are, of course, various sideline characters. A bit, I felt Ella Lily Highland, the Carlo actress who was so wonderful in Black Doves in December on Netflix, she shows up for one episode in a rather meagre role, given kind of the breakout role she had the last time
around. Yeah, maybe this was filmed before they realised.
I would imagine so. But there's a few other Irish people in it. There's a Keelan Dunn as well, who plays one of the 40 elephants. But I guess, not to be like this woke-arati guy, but it was kind of interesting just to see a gang of women rather than like another Peaky Blinders-esque gang of men dealing with violence versus, you know, depression or whatever.
Yes.
This time it was just women and they were greedy and I liked it.
Right, speaking of woke-arati, the next show is Zero Day. You can stream the entire series now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
Your friend Isar, ICE picked him up. He'll be deported within 2 days. Your father, Medicare stopped paying for his dialysis. He'll last, 5-6 weeks before he drops dead? And then you have a son, Charlie. Your ex, she's using again. I had her arrested. And your son, social services has him. They'll put him in foster care. But you know, when you think about it, Isar, your father, your son, that's three people. That's nothing compared to the thousands and thousands of innocent lives that were lost because of what you took part in. I think that's a fair exchange.
Given what Robert De Niro, who's playing a former president, thinks of the current president, is that there is a touch of wish fulfillment in this show?
Not only that, but there's even this scene early on in the first episode where Robert De Niro's former president, George Mullen, is visiting the kind of site where the New York Fire Department is helping to deal with this aftermath of this attack.
Mm.
And, you know, there's like, at the sideline behind barriers are these right-wing nut jobs going, they're all crisis actors or whatever. And Robert De Niro does his best, West Wing Bartlett speech, to settle them all down and really reignite everybody's patriotism for the US. And I sort of, that's where it lost me.
That
was the moment where I was like, okay, this is a fantasy, right? So this is a very thrillery, pulpy drama with an incredible cast attached, right? So it is Robert De Niro in his first ever leading TV role. But the other names are all very, very big names.
Jeannie Mack, they are, yeah. Like
Jesse Plemons, Joan Allen, Connie Britton, Angela Bassett, Gabby Hoffman, Dan Stevens, Bill Camp, Lizzie Kaplan. I could go on.
Mm.
And all in, I will say, it did lose me in the first episode and it never really recaptured me. So essentially, the story takes place on a zero, quote-unquote, zero day, which is when this cyber attack happens in the US. Basically, everyone's phone goes blank with this threatening line of, this will happen again, and planes fall from the sky and trains derail and nobody says anything about people getting stuck in lifts, but I imagine that happened too, right?
Yeah.
And all in, thousands of people are killed in this minute-long attack. And the US president, who is Angela Bassett, calls upon the former president to lead a commission to investigate it. So what my problem with it was, you have this guy who's a former president and you have all the baggage of that. He hasn't been faithful to his wife. You know, he has a troubled relationship with his daughter. He has a son who has passed away from a drug overdose.
Okay, so a Biden Clinton mashup there.
Right, and we're just biding our time for something else to happen. And essentially, he goes from being this president to then, you know, it would be unfair to say Jack Bauer-esque, but like, as in, he is running this anti-terrorism unit, but also taking part in the interrogation of like people that they arrest.
Okay. Yeah,
I felt that that was a little silly because you have this like septuagenarian former president. You know, what are they going to do? Not push the button? Right? And then into that comes all this intrigue, right? So you have various red herrings and so on. But the biggest one or moment of intrigue comes at the end of the first episode, where there is this twist where you do not know whether or not you can rely on this president's... if you can rely on him, right? That's all I'm going to say, right?
Yeah,
Because he is conflicted in some way, and I think to go into it would be some kind of spoiler.
Sure.
That's the most intriguing part of the tale. And for me, it you know, the kind of outcome and the revelation of it felt kind of underhand and pointless by the end. Like, all in, for me, it was a pulpy thriller, but not fun, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was, like, supposed to be edge-of-your-seat stuff, but I sort of felt like there was a lot of room on the edge of my seat. and, like, Robert De Niro, obviously, is a very famous, you know, actor and incredibly accomplished. And for me, I felt like he was kind of phoning it in here, that this was, that this was, like... Netflix offering him a new mansion and swimming pool, and good for him for getting it, and good for everyone else. But but for me, it did nothing. I found the intrigue boring. I found the plotting boring. I found the nods to kind of cultural zeitgeisty moments like a little out of date, even, you know, like as in they felt even stale by this point. And they're supposed to be,
hey kids. Yeah.
Right? Like, the person who's having the most fun is British actor Dan Stevens. He plays Evan Green, who is this kind of Tucker Carlson-esque shock jock talking head pundit guy. And he's having the most fun with it. And I guess his scenes are kind of, I found at least entertaining. But other than that, I found it tired. I just was like, you know what? I'm living through this. I don't actually need to see it in my thrillers.
But if Angela Bassett's the president, there's this massive cyber attack, and they need to obviously find out what happened. Does she not have is the head of the FBI retired? Or you know, why do you bring in a former president?
So the idea is that when he goes to visit New York City, where where his daughter is the congresswoman, her district, when he's visiting there, and he used to be in, I think he was maybe in the fire department himself or whatever, that he manages to change public opinion and rally public opinion so much around him that they think he will be the perfect partisan patsy to put into the hot seat.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That kind of makes sense. Right. Our third show is an update on Our Family. You can stream the entire series now on Sky Documentaries. Here's a clip.
Do you have a favorite failure?
So I wouldn't call it a failure, but I would call it something that was really, 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 really challenging. We recently adopted a little guy from China. Definitely not a failure.
I mean, I've never heard an answer like that.
When you adopt a child, it's forever. And when you adopt a child and there's stuff that you didn't know, it's genuinely just naturally hard. It just puts you in a spot you didn't know you were going to be in.
Usually it's like, what's your biggest failure? What's a failure you've learned from? And they'll be like, oh, you know, I posted too many videos in the first year and I burnt out or something like that.
Right, so this is about a family, and what is it about them?
So this is a really very sad story, ultimately, but a kind of timely one and interesting one at the same time. It comes from a director named Rachel Mason, and it essentially tells the story of the Stauffer family. So they are Micah and James Stauffer, who were a couple of YouTubers who essentially began vlogging about their lifestyle. So ostensibly, the whole thing is about family vloggers and people who sort of, I don't know if contentize is a verb, but let's just go with it, their life and their children, particularly in order to, you know, continue making a living through content sharing on social media platforms like YouTube. And this couple became very, very successful at it. And like many of them, they are these, you know, attractive, white, Christian, American family. All like perfect apple pie family, right? And the argument the documentary is making about them in particular is that you know, each time that Micah became pregnant, they saw this huge bump and increase in their viewership. And indeed, a huge bump in their partnership with various brands because, you know, you can sell, you can use anything to flog anything. And at one point in their, you know, in their lifetime, they decided, okay, we're going to adopt a child from China. And they adopt this boy that they rename Huxley. And he is a boy with additional needs. And they know that going in. And they then are, you know, featuring him for about 2 years on their channel. You know, Huxley doing this, Huxley doing that, Huxley's first trip to the zoo, Huxley's first haircut, etc., etc., etc. While flogging detergent, while flogging, I don't know, toys, whatever.
Yeah.
And then one day, just Huxley is like gone from the channel. And not only is he gone from the channel, but all of the past videos of him are being scrubbed from the channel as well. And people are very much, you know, where's Huxley? Where's Huxley? And they then release this very famous video. This is not a spoiler. I mean, it's the whole part of the documentary. They release this video, which is an update on our family, in which they reveal they have given up their adopted son and they were finding it too hard to live with him. And the internet, of course, reacts
was totally understanding and not judgmental about it, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the documentary is as much about how people hop on the bandwagon of vitriol and hatred towards people as it is a criticism of people who, you know, choose this vlogging lifestyle and monetize every single living aspect of children. Like, the argument it makes is that, you know, if you had a child on a set for something, like, there are various safeguards and legal protections for those children, but all of these are completely and utterly
And even kids who have YouTube channels, there's no protection for them at all at the moment.
So it's a very interesting documentary exploring all of that milieu. Now, I will just say, the first episode is setting the scene, essentially explaining what family vlogging is and, you know, introducing our principal pair here. And it is a waste of an hour, if you get me, because like,
if you don't know, if you know already,
if you know already, sure. But I don't think I needed a full hour to set the scene, right? Yeah. Like, as in, I think at this point, people know a lot of money can be made on YouTube, and you need one talking head to say that, you know, and we make the point. But what is fascinating, I think, about their case is, you know, essentially they go dark after this scandal erupts, and it's not surprising, except that James Stauffer is still, his channel still exists, and he is still uploading content constantly to his channel because his channel is about being a mechanic and like fixing up cars. So he has been able to keep going and maintain whatever business. I mean, obviously, I'm sure at much less value than he was earning when they were at their peak. But Micah has completely and utterly disappeared off the face of the earth as far as we know, certainly in this part of the world. And it was just very interesting to see who gets punished more in this relationship, you know, and how the internet goes after people and how women in particular bear the brunt more. So it's a very, very well-made documentary when it gets to the meat and veg. But the starter episode, you could kind of be, you know, looking at your phone.
Do they get to talk to the principals?
Unfortunately not. And obviously that is a huge criticism of the show. But it's not surprising that Micah and James Stauffer do not want to give interviews and have limited control over what goes out. They do, however, talk to someone else who was in a similar situation. And that was interesting to hear from because obviously it's a facsimile of them. It's someone like fulfilling that role and explaining how hard it might be if you adopt a child, not knowing the full extent of needs that that person has. And maybe you are not actually the best person to, you know, to take care of them. So in some regards, I think it is balanced and fair towards the Stauffers, but they don't get the final word at all. You know, it is lacking because of that, but it's still a very intriguing kind of documentary nonetheless.
Those three shows are 1,000 Blows. You can stream all of season one now on Disney Plus. 0 Day, you can stream the entire series now on Netflix. And An Update on Our Family, you can stream the entire series now on Sky Documentaries. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
There's a nationwide funding crisis that prevents teachers from getting the resources they need. That's where Donors Choose comes in. People like you can help teachers get funding for supplies and experiences their students need to succeed. Learn more at DonorsChoose.org.